It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go.
Where are we going?
We're going into 2021 here with this show.
Ooh, let's get there pretty quick.
Well, we know this is the first FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors of the new year.
It's unbelievable.
It's a fresh year. We hope it's a fresh year.
We hope it's a different year, a better different year.
Okay, good. Thank you for using better because yes. Different is just tempting fate out there. Lot to talk about on today's show. Of course, we're going to talk about what's going on in the woods, and you and I have not gotten to talk in a week or so. We were talking last week that this pre-rut period is a good time to see bucks on their feet. I called that shot for me.
Me too. Yeah. Same thing.
They were doing it.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that and talk about it more coming up in just a little bit. But right now on the fishing front, we want to check in with our buddy Captain Bobby Aprescato of the A Team. And are the trout up on their fins doing it right now? Are they moving?
Yeah. Now I'm picturing trout being up on their fins. You've got this picture in my mind, you know, of this mating thing going on.
Yeah, those old buck trout.
The only thing I can tell you for sure is they will come up towards the surface of the water. I don't know if that's part of the mating deal or part of the eating deal, but
maybe both. Just call home and ask my wife. Okay, listen, you mentioned coming up towards the top, and I want to get into the details of what's going on, but was that just talking about eating, or have you had any kind of topwater action here in the last week or two?
Because we hadn't been throwing it. It's, you know, and it would probably work. It's, you know, that time of year when we're, you know, particularly, you know, in the last few days where we've got water temperatures that have dropped down. I mean, really gotten down the low and actually right at 50 degree, that they're just not quite aggressive enough to get up on the surface, you know. Not that they wouldn't. I've caught trout on topwater this time of year, but what they are eating is other types of fin fish imitations, which subsurface lures, which are, you know, the slick lure, which we talk. That's about all we throw. Matter of fact, I'm looking at my rods here. We just finished up a trip, and every single, I think I got one popping cork tied on. Every other rod's got a slick lure on now, it now.
Wait. You say, and I stop you most times because I know better, but number two, I'll look at emails I get or texts I get, and people say, Bobby's talking about a slick lure. Once again, I know I've asked you this 10 times. Don't get frustrated. Explain to folks what a slick lure is.
Well, the best way to describe it is it's a soft, you know, mirror lure. Mirror lure is a lure that I grew up with and Mike grew up with. We all grew up throwing for trout. It's, you know, it's like the go-to fin fish imitation. This is a soft mirror lure is the best way I can describe it. And if you picture like more like a giant jerk shad, you know, that type of lure, it's something along that line. It's kind of but it's got a hook. The hook you use on it is actually buried into the lure. It's a big hard, but it's a big piece of rubber that you put the hook in.
Yeah, it's like weedless, right? I mean, you could rig it.
You're rigging it. Not that we're fishing weedless,
right,
but that's how it's rigged. The bass guys would call it skinning the hook. You're just basically putting the lure where the tip of the hook is buried in the back of the lure. But there's no big treble hook hanging below, or sets of treble hooks hanging below the lure. And I think that's one of the reasons that it works so well is that there's just no exposed hooks. And it really creates a real nice profile of a fin fish, and it's got a tremendous amount of action. The hook that we use on it is almost like a rudder effect. And when you're twitching that lure, the lure's jerking back and forth, just like you'd walk the dog on a topwater, except that you're doing it subsurface. So, anyway, that's what it is. It's like a you can either call it a soft mirror lure or a gigantic grub. That's the best way I can describe it.
So how are you using the slick lure?
Well, what it does is when we use a 1/8 ounce belly, well, like a swim bait hook on it, and you throw it out there, and usually what I do is I tell guys, you know, just throw it out there, and depending on the depth of the water, you know, it works to about 8 feet of water. or shallower. And so you throw it out there, and, you know, if you're, let's just say you're in 5-6 feet of water, I tell them to give them about a 1 or 2 count. It sinks about a foot a second. So I let it sink, and then as they're reeling it in, I just slowly reeling the lure in and just gently raising the rod tip of the and that causes the lure to kind of swing back and forth.
So it's not jerking it or anything.
Yeah, you don't want to jerk it because the lure's got a ton of natural action. So you really almost just, and I have, that's the thing I have to do is I have usually have to back everybody off, just like you're overworking it a little bit. Just kind of roll it a little bit, and the lure will jerk back and forth. And then every once in a while you can put a little pause in it, let it sink back down. But that's basically how you work it. And the fish will kind of let you know how they want it. The big thing is this time of year when we're using it, as I mentioned, is with water temperature in the low mid and low 50s, nothing's moving real fast.
Sure. That's one thing, too, that same water temperature, so the bait's affected the same with the fish. So the bait's moving more slowly and the fish are moving. They've all gotten down, all had a governor put on their engine.
That's exactly right. You know, when you start talking about a cold-blooded creature like a fish or a forage, you know, their body temperature is the same as the water temperature. So everything slows down. So if you're thinking you're going to catch a fish just burning a lure through the water, it's just not going to happen this time of year. You got to make it look, you know, look like the forage, and you got to get it to the fish so the fish doesn't have to chase down a real fast-moving bait.
All right, so I can pull the conversation back up on the road, but I just want to do that and talk about slick lures because I always get questions when you're talking about them. So
a lot of people don't know what they are.
That's right, and yeah. It's you know, Bobby taught me about them, and I was just they're awesome. All right, so fishing slick lures right now. You said only one rod with a cork on it. Everything else slick lure. That tells us we're fishing deeper. But you mentioned 5 or 6 feet. That's 5 or 6 feet deep. In 5 or 6 feet, or is that 5 or 6 feet deep in 8 feet or 20 feet?
Well, no. If you're in like 20 feet of water, it's not going to work. You're going to need to be down in the lower third of the water column. So, you know, if you're like talking about 20 feet deep, you're talking about like Delta or Mobile River depths, you know, the Industrial Canal depths. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is, you know, the lower third of the column. You know, so if you're in, you know, you're in Dog, for example, the deepest water you're going to find there is about 7 or 8 feet. So, you know, that's where I'm talking about 3 or 4 feet, 5 feet. Fowl River, you're going to be 7, 8 feet, 5, 6 feet, you know, is where you're going to be fishing, that sort of thing. So it's just kind of relative to the area that you're fishing in.
And they will get, I mean, we talk about this all the time. You catch fish this time of year, they have mud sometimes on their bellies from laying in the,
on
the bottom.
Yeah, especially, you know, like the other day when we had, when was I said the other day? Gosh, my days all run together.
After Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, after Christmas, we had that 30, mm-hmm. we had that 30 degree nights. That's when you really find those fish really on the bottom. And you'll catch fish.
But you're still catching
mud
them. But you're still catching them. That's what's wild. People say, oh, it's too cold to catch fish. Bobby's still catching them.
No. They're still going to eat. You know, it's just you got to figure out what to do with it. You know, but that's when it's the toughest. When they're belly down in that mud, that's when it gets the toughest. You can still catch them, but you catch. You know, to me, it's usually like 2 days after the front is when it really gets good. You know, it starts to pick back up. So you know, I don't like fishing immediately behind the front. You know, that gets a little bit tough. You know, immediately after front, but usually 2 days. 2 days after a front it starts to really pick up.
What about the idea of, and this is going to be right after the front, but here comes the front through. We get the north wind. Any of us that duck hunt or fish on the causeway realize water gets, you know, your tides don't ever exhibit their high. They get pressed down by the high pressure in the north wind. While that makes it tough to get around, does that push the fish in? Do you think it stacks them, you know, where it makes it denser where they are?
I absolutely think it does. I think that's what happens is that water level, because the column shrinks, it's not that they can't survive out there after it warms up a little bit and the salinity's okay for them, but I think what happens with that, when you're like what you're talking about, is they have to get down there because the water temperature stays more stable. You know, and I think it's all about that, you know, just a survival thing for them. So they'll gather into the areas that we talk about, the deepest areas relative to where you're fishing. And that's where they're going to be just from a survival standpoint. And then the other thing is what we talked about with the freshwater runoff, that's the other issue that happens is you get fresh water, the salinity is the saltier water is going to be down in the denser, so it's going to be down in the deeper holes, that sort of thing, you know?
So it may be slower biting, but they're in that situation might be stacked in, you know, once you find them.
And it's like you and I talked about on the morning show the other day, too. It's like you'll start to go through these schools of fish. I mean, go through these areas where you'll go, you know, you'll catch three or four, five, six fish, and you might go 10 minutes without anything, and then also you catch a couple more. And that's kind of what that's all about, too, is you'll find them start to gather up from a survival standpoint. And, of course, you and I were talking about the full moon, too. So that, you know, that kind of was a double whammy thing to where they're finding those salinity, high salinity areas and the stability of the more stable water temperatures.
Bobby, I remember a year ago or maybe 2 years ago that you were telling us you had the best fishing trip of your life, and it was a really cold day. It was like down in the 30s, and I think you was at Fowl River or somewhere, but you said you caught more speckled trout than you'd ever caught in your life, and it was super cold.
It was, yeah, and that was actually in the Delta. That was December 30th.
Delta, okay.
Yeah, the December 30th of 2011.
Still, you remember it. How about that?
Well, you can't forget days like that, dude. We quit counting at 250 trout, and that was probably at noon. And what was funny is we had done the morning radio show, mm-hmm. and we at that time we only had one or two fish, you know, which was at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And I remember it was starting to get dark, and everybody kept going, you know, we were going to knock off at 12, 1 o'clock, you know, and then it got to be 2 o'clock, and everybody was catching them still. And it got to be 4, 4:30, and somebody said, you're not worried about running down here, running out of here at the dark? I said, no, the only thing that scares me about anywhere up here is going through the tunnel at dark. I can handle the delta in pitch black dark. What scares me to death is that tunnel.
Well said. So wintertime fishing. So that was in the delta, but right now delta's, you know, full of fresh water, at least up on top. You and I have talked about that before, and I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a way to prove it or something that. You know, are some of them pushed down in those deep, and I don't mean Mobile River, are they pushed down the deep holes in the Tensaw, the Blakely, you know, there in the Spanish? Do you have an opinion on that? Or
you know, that's a conventional thinking, and there is, and there's probably guys, and you've probably done it. I'm not that good of a real deep water fisherman, so that would be frustrating for me. The other thing that I think that happens with that, quick answer to your question, yes. I think there are pockets of fish because you can go up there, you know, when the river levels, you know, kind of subside a little bit, you can go up there and start catching some fish again, which means that those fish never left, you know what I'm saying? So they were probably down in those deeper salinity. I just can't catch them when they get in those deep holes. I was talking to a guy today, earlier this week when we were finishing up, and he was talking about a deep hole, you know, in the river we were fishing and catching them. And I was, you know, I don't think when they get in those holes a lot of time that they're actually feeding. I think they're there for survival. So, you know, it's a survival thing. Not that you can't catch them, but I'm just saying when they start getting on those ledges like they are right now and even out on the flats when you get the warmer days, that's when they're out there feeding. When they're in those holes like that, I think they're just surviving, you know.
And waiting for conditions to change, like you said.
Waiting for the conditions to, you know, because things have happened. It's gotten cold. They got, they got fresh water. And if you think about what they're in those deep holes, and everybody's like, oh, you know, there's good, clear, salty water in the hole. But if you think about an 8 or a 10 or a 15-foot layer of muddy fresh water above them, it's kind of like you and I and Mike being in a dark room.
Mm-hmm,
you know, you got to bounce it off their nose to get them to bite it, and even then they're not really wanting to bite, you know. That's deep hole fishing according to Bobby.
Whether
it's right or wrong.
You got the proofs in the pudding with you, you know.
Yeah.
But I like the idea, too. People think about these cold fronts. What you're saying is a couple days after that big bull front, then you really start looking for them maybe to strap the feed bag on, maybe ease out of those hunker down spots.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just don't like fishing just the day after one of those bull fronts.
It's because it's cold.
It's just tough, you know.
Well said. All right, I want to do this, too, before we wrap up here, because Captain Bobby catches fish every month of the year, January being a month of the year. He does it now, too. You got any room in January? Can people book trips now?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Probably by now, if you check on my Facebook or my website, you're going to see we're running a winter special now because I don't have my normal sponsor obligations because of this nuttiness going on with group gatherings and so forth.
Yeah,
because so
explain that. Usually you're at every trade show for fishing out there.
That between boat shows and tackle shows and that sort of thing, it's, and Mike knows what this is all about.
Yep.
He knows, you know, he's been through plenty of them, and this is the time of year that they don't normally do them. Well, we're not, obviously not doing them this year, so do some wintertime fishing. And, you know, the thing about it is you know, you don't put the rods up this time of year. It's the fishing still. There's a lot of opportunities. There's trout in the rivers, which is what we've been talking about. There's reds down in the marsh. You catch a right weather day. You can get out at the mouth of the bay. You can catch bull reds, which is, the only time you don't catch them is during the hot months. Right now it's good. You can get out there and fish those close-in structure and catch, you know, sheephead, white trout, ground mullet, who knows.
Groceries. Right?
So there's a lot of opportunities out there.
Absolutely. So, and I will tell folks, too, this is one of these times you can get a super education. You can all times a year with Bobby, but you book that trip. You're going to have fun. But he's also, if you're interested, somebody who'll tell you, and he always has for me, tell you why he thinks, like he's doing with us now, why he thinks the fish are there, you know, why they're biting this. And that's knowledge that's helped me in decades going forward.
So, whether it be right or wrong, I'll tell you what I think.
You're pretty darn right, the performance shows for sure. Bobby, once again, so somebody wants to get one of the wintertime specials, more info on that, where do they go?
Just go to ateamfishing.com, which is the website, and it'll have all of that information on there as well as contact information. You could book through the website or just give us a call the old-fashioned way.
We'll do it. Thanks for checking in, and we'll be calling you again soon. Happy New Year.
All right, guys. Y'all don't
lay
too many of them deer down now.
Yeah, we're going to shift gears.
Leave a few for seed.
You hear that, Mike?
Okay. There's a bunch of them for seed.
Right.
Thank you, Bobby.
Coming right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along on this first show of the new year. And a big thank you, Captain Bobby Abrascato. Talk about that wintertime fishing.
That boy is three books of knowledge.
He really is. And, you know, a lot of people will book trips with Bobby just be catching fish. But if you're somebody who is you're already an inshore fisherman, maybe you even have your own boat.
Yeah.
And it's because if you go with a guide, I'll say this, Bobby's a friend of ours and, just away from radio shows and all that. But if you go with a guide just to go, there's a spot. Well, those spots change. Okay, those spots
regularly change, that's right.
But if you go with Bobby and you ask him, like you said, he's a wealth of knowledge on this. What I did over the years with Bobby and said, okay, we're catching them right now, Bobby. Why do you think this is going on? Why are we in 3 feet of water? Why are we in 8 feet of water? Why are we in this, that, or the other? And he'll tell you.
Yeah.
And then that's something you can take when conditions change or you're in a new area. You can go, okay, well, when we were there, we were fishing in the spring because of this. Let me see somewhere that is like this. And then you implement that, and you have success. And that's just learning. So it's not like, where's the spot he's going to? Because those spots change.
Yeah.
But he will teach you. You know, if you ask, he'll teach you why are you catching fish right now? Why is this? And he'll explain it.
Well,
so,
it might be just riding down the bay, and all of a sudden there's a big flock of birds, and you go over there and catch fire out of them, you know?
Yeah, but
it's not a spot.
Right.
It's just where the fish are.
But why was he looking in that area?
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Why is he talking and looking right to the left, right to the left?
Yep.
It's because he's looking for birds.
Because he knows these conditions this time of year. So, yeah,
can
learn. All right, let's talk some hunting.
Let's do it.
So, last time we're talking with Chuck Sykes.
Yeah.
And we talked about this pre-rut period. At that point, I had seen scrapes on the property and all that, but seen a little bit of push around from spikes and stuff like that. Well, Katie barred the door. What Santa brought to me was some rack bucks on their feet. Now, I did not see one that I was ready to shoot, age-wise or something, but I was taking pictures of bucks with my phone hanging out over the tree, snapping pictures of them. I had bucks Saturday, Sunday. I mean, it was just on.
Yeah.
How about you?
The chasing does?
Chasing. So there was a lot of just on there, which is actually, I like it. I like pre-rut, man. I got to tell you, as much as I like rut, And we'll get Jay Graddick on here with us shortly. There's some big bucks have gone down lately. But pre-rut, man, they're on their feet. They're exposing themselves a lot more in the daylight, checking scrapes. I'm watching deer make scrapes and tend scrapes all weekend. They're moving, scent checking. They're not running wide open.
Yeah.
So they're walking, stopping where you get a shot. So I saw a lot of that. Then on Sunday morning, I saw the first real chasing, not pushing. And I guess we should, it may be all in the eye of the beholder. But to me, chasing like in the rut, tongues hanging out, running, all kind of pushing to me is just that buck comes in, there's some does, he pushes them around,
yeah,
one goes
in
the thicket.
A couple minutes later, he comes back in.
That's
yeah,
what I call
that
pushing.
Kind of
is that what
right.
you call pushing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I saw running.
Yeah. I did too. We saw some too.
And this is the – so if y'all don't know, Mike and I talk about it. Mike hunts in the Black Belt.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm hunting in West Mobile County. It's pretty good that those are lined up. We're both seeing the same thing. And they were Sunday morning, like I saw pushing and cruising the other hunts. But Sunday morning, I had three bucks running. I actually felt like I needed to shoot these younger bucks just to protect the doe.
Yeah.
They were giving her, and at one point I'm sitting there and I was looking down, I'm in the woods, but there's a road that I'm watching, and I guess I didn't doze off, I wasn't asleep, but I was dazed, right?
Yeah.
I just kind of get zoned in on something, and I hear what in my mind at that point I said, because we don't have hogs, thank God, but we had a picture a month ago or so of a couple hogs.
Yeah.
And I hear what I think is dang hogs coming in. Palmetto's busting, and it was three different bucks grunting at the same time. I stood up in the climber. I said, well, I'm fixing to lay these few hogs down. I'm going to solve that problem. Mm-mm. It was multiple bucks grunting at different pitches and rolling through those palmettos.
And they were together?
They were coming at her from different angles, knocking stuff down.
The doe was in there. And they were coming at different
angles. They push her out. She squirts out. And then they go to running figure eights.
Yeah.
I mean, it was running. So I don't know if she got bred, and I don't know if she was, I guess, not in standing estrus, but she was close enough that it wasn't pushing. It was chasing.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, you know, I know that the rut's going on when I'm riding my golf cart around, and I come around this corner, and this woods are kind of open. I mean, if there's deer there,
you see them.
Looking, you're going to see them.
Mm-hmm.
We round this little corner, and we're just easing through the woods, and all of a sudden, a doe jumps up right beside us. I mean, just 5 foot from us. Like, how did I not see that? And about that time, I'm looking at the doe, 5 feet from her is a buck.
It was laid down with her there.
He laid down with her, yeah. So, yeah, the rut's starting to kick off.
And
when a buck is
laying
with the doe, you know that it's happening. And I guarantee you, that doe just ran out maybe 20, 30 foot and stood there, and the buck ran off. If I'd have just waited there another 5 minutes or so,
he can go
10
leader.
Minutes, of course, it was just a little 8-point.
Right.
You know, it didn't matter. But he would have come right back looking for his doe. He wasn't going too far away from her, I promise you.
And it's interesting, too. We talk about peak rut dates. And, you know, we've done this on the show, the full breakdown of all the different rut dates here. And we'll talk about, like up in the Black Belt and a lot of areas of the state, we're looking at coming up the weekend of the 15th, 16th, about mid-January.
Mid-January. We're from about the 5th through the 20th. Range is when it really kind of gets kicked off pretty good.
But I wonder if, like most things in nature, it's a bell curve, that the majority of them are going to be in that window. But you wonder if, like, an older, real healthy doe comes in a little bit early or starts exhibiting, you know, part of the estrus, may not be at standing estrus where she'll be bred, but she's – because you'll – in that one area, I saw cruising from the other bucks, but in that one area I saw that chasing, you know, and you're seeing that buck. That's a behavior
but I'm
you just
chasing
explained
too.
Yeah, know, that's what so, I'm saying. But the behavior you're describing from those two, that's like mid January.
Yeah.
But then you see other bucks, they're still in a cruising phase. That tells me that some of the does may be getting closer, but not
maybe.
All, you know. But it's been rack bucks coming out of the woodwork.
That's good. Any new ones?
Some new ones.
Yeah, well, that's really good news.
Hey, we'll talk about some big bucks hitting the dirt. too. Yeah. Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing joins us here in just minutes. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And tell you what, we'll bring our buddy Jay Graddick from Wild Game, Skinner's Wild Game Processing in and just throw him right into the discussion you and I were having during the news break without any pre-warning. So Mike and I were talking about this. I was talking about what the last few days were, what it was like. For Saturday, Sunday, might have been Friday, but I had to, no, Friday I got to go in the afternoon. Slipped out after Christmas.
That's because you're close.
Yeah, so it was wide open in our woods. I mean, West Mobile County, wide open with young bucks. But we were talking about scrapes. I won't get into that. But we were talking about scrapes, Jay. And people have said, oh, well, that's that big buck has that scrape, or that's that buck scrape. I'm watching a scrape over the weekend. And I told Mike, I saw at least seven different bucks work that same scrape. Community scrape. What do you think? I think that's more normal than it is abnormal.
Oh, it's normal, very normal, especially this time of year. Probably these bucks, year after year after year, you can just about go to the same holly tree, the same cedar tree, or whatever.
Yep.
They'll be rubbed. The scrapes are a lot of times in the same places over and over and over again. And I've seen scrapes in the same places for 10 years, and I know it ain't the same deer.
No. Right.
Yeah, and I had a buddy of mine in Georgia that I told him about hunting a place, and he went on it, and there were six bucks. A group of six bucks showed up, and every one of them worked the scrape.
Yep.
And so I think it's just a territorial thing right now. It's a guy just kind of they're going around marking their hey I'm here let's work it let's. We're starting to get in the mood a little bit, and right now is the time to hunt scrape. Mm-hmm. Don't wait till the rut's running. When the rut's running, I tell you what, you go to the Midwest, they scrape like crazy in October. About that third week in October, fourth week of October, it's over. The scrapes dry up, and the bucks are on the does. So right now, when they're starting to lay these scrapes down, is the time to hunt scrape.
That's for sure.
I agree.
Now, we'll talk about the pictures you've been sending Mike and I because I'm not surprised. I'm blown away by the quality of the deer, but I'm not surprised from what Mike saw in the Black Belt I saw in West Mobile County. We just talked about it on the show that it was this pre-rut period that I love to hunt and bucks cruising or bucks up. And I mean, it lived up to it. And the pictures you've been sending us, obviously, y'all seen them coming into Skinner's.
Absolutely. We took some more in this morning. In the mornings, that biggest deer, that 241-pound deer, was killed in the afternoon. That deer, they had pictures of it for 2 years. I actually have a live picture of that deer last year. So it was just a matter of time it came by somebody. But these other bucks, they're showing up on the food. And I don't know if they're just kind of their body's telling them to tank up, the rut's coming, and there's no telling what kind of food they got out there for them. But they're eating it up right now, and they're exposing themselves. And who knows? I think the right now the scraping time. Don't put it off. If you've got a hot scrape going on. And I like that aggressive scrape. I want to see a limb broke off, mm-hmm. 5 foot above it, all mangled up, just shredded. You know, not one of these little old, just a little old pawed out spot in the ground with not much around it. I want to know I'm hunting a mature buck. And that mature buck can get up there and get his rack up in them dang limbs and really do some damage. You know when you've got an aggressive scrape versus just a little old happen to walk by there and hit it one time deal.
Yeah, I've seen some scrapes, Jay. I know you have, too, that, you know, they're maybe 2 foot in diameter, 3 foot in diameter, and I've seen some that are as big as a bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it looks like, golly, never seen nothing like it in my life.
Right, and I like that real aggressive, you know, they tear them limbs up, you know, and
really maybe a rub on a tree right next to it, a big rub or something. Not just a little docile thing. I want that aggressive deer that he's ready to expose himself. Is what I usually go by.
One thing
I
good
might be doing it wrong, but that's what I look for.
One thing good about cameras, you can put cameras on these things now, and you can find out what's coming to them. You know, you can see where there are a lot of different bucks come to that scrape. It's just not one buck coming to it. There's a bunch of bucks coming to the scrapes.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So, you know, and if there's a good one coming, you know, worth shooting, then you can just keep hunting, and he's going to come back to it sooner or later.
I got to tell this. That old boy I was telling you about in Georgia, he had, this was a long time ago, back in the 80s, he had a D-cell plastic flashlight in his back pocket. We were bow hunting. He got bug fever so bad, he said the batteries in the flashlight was rattling.
we can all hear that.
Yeah, we remember that, don't we?
you mentioned, let's go back here, too. You're talking about that one buck, and people can you got these pictures up on the Facebook page, or where can they check out some of these bucks?
Yeah, we'll get them posted today.
Okay.
If they hadn't already done it, I talked to my people. I said, hey, we gotta get these bucks on the Facebook page.
So absolutely.
Skinner's Wild Game.
Just search Skinner's Wild Game on Facebook?
Yes, Skinner's Wild Game in Thomasville, Alabama. There's one in Georgia. It was the same name. Just make sure you got Thomasville. You'll see it.
Well, I mean, it might be a common name in that business.
Yeah.
Skin a deer.
Exactly.
Okay, so,
exactly.
But you mentioned this, so we talk about the rack portion of this, but you said 241 is what that buck weighed.
Yes, sir.
Okay, what county did it come from?
That's help me out, Mike, Thomas. What
Thomaston, that's Marengo County.
That's Marengo. Okay. Yeah. I was wondering what I was getting at is I didn't know, because I knew there were some of those deer like a Choctaw County. What I was getting at is we talked last time a bunch about how the regulations have, you know, and you see it. I mean, you are the pinch point there in what you do, that the racks have gotten bigger. The average buck coming in, the racks have gotten bigger. But those bodies, I mean, we're seeing bodies on bucks, not just from the black belt, not just from a place where they're farming beans. We're seeing deer get, a 200-pound deer used to be a big story for us in the Pawnee Woods. Now it happens every year.
Well, we had a girl brought one in, a teenage girl, killed her first deer, weighed 237 during the youth season. We got this 241, and we're seeing, you know, 190s to 210s already this year. And, you know, and they showed me a picture where that 241 was killed. They got a picture of an old buck. His rack's not a lot. He's an old deer. But, man, I think he's 15, 20 pounds heavier than the one they killed.
Ryan Kennedy killed one in Marengo County yesterday, the day before yesterday, 260 pounds.
I'm looking at the scale there. Yeah. They must have been putting a finger on that.
I don't know. 260 pounds, but I don't know, look at the picture of
it's a, it's a, it's a monster.
Yeah.
And one thing, I mean, it's not to take, I mean, 260.
That's Mike Candy's son.
Unreal. Yeah. There, but the black belt has produced, you know, and I used to hunt up there near Thomaston years ago, and you would see a deer that make 200 there. But in the Pawnee Woods.
Or more, yeah.
Yeah, or more. Yeah. But in the Pawnee Woods, we just did. I just remember growing up, they were 170. You know, or yeah,
they they don't have the same type of food.
No, but explain to me how. Maybe it's all the stuff we're feeding them with the baiting or something. But
corn does fatten them up. There's no doubt about it, and they're eating plenty of corn right now.
So
they're going from one corn pile to another.
It's important. I think you got to have the big picture on this, on the body size, guys. I think that if you help that deer get through the rut, through February, if you're feeding him and he comes off chasing does and he's got plenty of food to help him get back going again, I think it's gonna help the rack growth. He's not pulled down so bad that it takes him 2 months to get over it. If he can get to the food and just get a jump start on next year and put on some true body weight. I mean, the black belt, if you guys think back, Mike, if you think back in the 70s, when Camden and those areas there, they kill some monster bucks.
300-pound deer.
monster.
300 pound deer. There were 300 pound deer killed. I remember a 308 pound deer being killed.
It's like
in Dayton.
It's like Iowa.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I remember. I heard about that deer.
Yeah.
And what you had then is you had an agricultural, mixed agricultural. They still had some soybeans and row crops, and they didn't have just these 100% pine plantations.
Oh, there wasn't any pine plantation up there hardly at all.
That's right. A lot of hardwood, a lot of mixed forest.
And here's the other key to it. There wasn't anybody hardly hunting up there at that time, too. There wasn't a tree stand every 300 yards. You know, a lot of places just nobody was hunting.
Mike, you ain't gonna believe what I found the other day. I found my old Baker tree stand.
Boy, that's back in the 70s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Back then, buddy. I had bruises on my chest from my button. Remember, you had to hug the tree. You didn't have
when
it first come out. It wasn't 2 pieces. It was just 1 piece.
Yeah, that's right. You just had the foot piece.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hug the tree and climb the tree.
Have you been looking for it and you found it?
No. I went over to my mom's garage and I walked in there and I looked over there. I'm like, whoa. Because I know where there's one. There's one in an oak tree up here. The tree done growed up and blowed the frame up. And then I seen that one leaning against the wall. I said, I'll be doggone. Look at this.
How about that?
You know, I hate to break up the history lesson, y'all, but what I'm getting at is we're seeing that again. We're seeing these body sizes coming up again. We're going to come right back. More with Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game and talk some more of this pre-rut. Give you some tips here. I'm going to lean on Mike. I'm going to lean on Jay. What you can do in your next hunt here to take advantage of the pre-rut. It's coming up. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. First one of the new year.
Yes, sir.
Talking
got
deer.
Got more to go.
Talking rut. And it's a good thing. And pre-rut, too. I got Jay Graddick on the phone, Mike Ward in the studio with me. I'm going to hand it over to these guys. We've got about 7 minutes right here. Let's do it this way. Start off with Jay. Pre-rut. People are in it. Where you talked about scrapes earlier. Give somebody a tip. What should they take to the woods this weekend?
I tell you, if you can find that active scrape line, go into a food source, and you can get on the downwind side of it. You don't want to get right on top of it. You want to be, if you can, 50 yards or so from it, where you can see it good. Because sometimes they're gonna pass that scrape. They may not go right to that scrape, but they may actually pass a little bit on the downwind side of that thing. So that is that's telling you, hey, I'm walking this way, I'm going to this food, I'm going out here, and I'm scraping my way to get there. That's a good place to hunt.
So scrape lines off food sources. Would you, if you didn't know where one is right now, would you take the big trail coming off of a feeding source with like a big patch or something like that, and follow it till you picked up the scrape line, or how would you break that down? Somebody doesn't already have an idea. Maybe they're new in a club or something like that.
Well, if you don't already know your property, your big main trails coming into a place are a lot of times that's your does and things coming in here. And if those bucks, not that they're any smarter or anything else, they just come in from a different place. So try to identify where you think your bucks are coming from. And fall back there and get on, if you can get on that scrape line. And I'm not talking close to the food source. I'm talking sometimes quarter mile. Okay, these deer, you'll be surprised how far they'll, some of them will lay right outside of sight of the food plot, okay? But you'll be surprised sometimes how far these deer travel. So a quarter mile ain't but 400 yards. So just back off of there, where you got them in the daylight hours coming by, And pay really a lot of attention. Try not to walk down the scrape line to get there. If the scrape line's right in a road and that's your way to get in there, then that's not a good idea. Don't walk down the same scrape line, the same path that the deer's walking down, because that night when he comes through there, if you don't see him, he's going to smell that you were there, and he may actually abandon it for a little while. So access to it, you want to come in adjacent to it, you want to be downwind of it a little bit. I would suggest, you know, close to 50 yards, and you'll be surprised. Sometimes they don't walk that. They don't just jump up in there and just start scraping, but they'll still come by there.
All right. Yeah. There's one. Mike.
Okay. Well, every piece of property is different, for one thing.
Sure.
You know, and if you have a clear cut and you can see a long distance, this time of the year is awesome because the bucks are starting to look for the does, and they're going to be moving. So if
they're showing themselves.
Showing themselves. So if you've got a place where you can see a long distance, whether it's a long road, I mean, I love hunting roads. You know that. We've talked about it many times on this show, hunting a road where they're crossing back and forth, and especially if you got a pretty big road where they'll – a lot of times they'll walk out and stop for a second.
Blue
look.
Bucket.
Yeah.
Put a blue bucket
out there where they'll stop. And the other thing is hunt a place where you have a lot of does this time of year because the bucks are coming looking for does. I've got three main patches on. I got a little 350-acre piece I hunt, and I got six patches, but I got three patches that we mainly hunt. And I've got one patch that majority of our does, for some reason, come to that patch.
Okay.
So that's where we're going to be hunting when the wind's right. We're going to be hunting that patch mainly because there's a lot of does coming in there, and the bucks are coming in. That's where I was telling you a while ago that we saw all the buck chasing a doe.
Right.
They're coming in there and chasing the does. So that's what we're going to be doing.
What about, and just about 2 minutes left here, time of the day? Because, you know, you talk about if you're hunting the does, they're going to be in there in the morning, could be there in the afternoon. But just me watching trail cam or whatever, when these bucks are on their feet, I'm seeing a lot more just bucks walking. I mean,
sure,
10 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon kind of stuff.
This time of year don't make any difference. They're going to be up and looking all the time, all day long. 2 years ago, my grandson killed one 10 o'clock in the morning sitting on that green field where all the does are, and killed that 134.5-inch 22-inch wide
stud,
13-point, following two does out in the greenfield, 10 o'clock in the morning.
So you're saying stick with it?
Stick with it, absolutely. When rut starts, stick with it.
These are some things y'all can take in the woods, work with you this weekend. Let me throw this in, too, that in that incredible hunt I had Sunday morning, I was playing with casino money at that point because I knew the big one that I had not seen him in there. These three, you know, eights were in there running them around. So I grunted at him and used that Primos can.
Yeah.
And those pictures on my phone where I was taking pictures of this eight under my tree, that came straight to that. So
it came to the.
You know, we always talk about when you can use this stuff.
This time of year.
This time of year worked for me. What do you think, Jay? Yep.
Yesterday, 2 days ago, I heard a buck in a clear cut, Mike. I got an 80-acre clear cut that's broom sage and pine trees about 2 feet tall.
Oh, that's perfect.
I had one. I bet he grunted 40 times. He was a good-sized body deer, but he wasn't. He was a six. I saw two other nice bucks, a 10, and it looked like an eight. But you're right. The clear cuts are on fire right now.
Yeah, if I had one place to hunt, and I had a clear cut, that's the only place I'd hunt just about right now.
Okay, I'm going to get a new logging crew in. And
yeah, I'd get me a clear cut. If I had the land and had the means, I'd cut me a clear cut every year.
There you go, a fresh one. Hey, Jay, remind folks, if they have not been to see you before, how they can find you.
Guys, in Thomasville, we are, when you get to Hardee's, just go west across from Hardee's, go to the stop sign, we're right there. On 154 in Daphne, we're on Highway 181, just north of the intersection of 64.
There we go. All right, big thank you, Jay. We appreciate the update, and people can check out the Facebook page and see some fine bucks on there.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it, Jay.
Big thank you
so much.
Big thank you to Jay Graddick. Big thank you to Captain Bobby Abrascato. Thank you to my friend Mike Ward. And let's go get in the woods.
That's where we headed.
All right. Hopefully these stories won't just be watching them. They'll be, hey, here's where I shot.
Yeah, we'll probably end up killing hogs.
You'll kill hogs. I mean, as I said, I thought I had hogs from the amount of grunting that was going on the other day. All right. Prep Sports Report on the way next.